Welcome to study group number 5, the final study group for Audio Essentials as it stands, with the next study group occurring this time next week, which will be part 2 of effects, during which you will be joined by all of your other classmates who will be taking Reaper, Goldwave, or both. Today, I want to do a little bit of a wrap up on interfaces and talk about mixers, not the ones in the kitchen, though those are useful. The ones you would see in studios or radio stations or maybe your desk at some point. Do you need one? Do you know anyone who does? Will you ever conceivably need one? What do all the buttons do? Are there any red buttons? And do they do bad things if you press them? Things like that you will know by the end of this study group. But before we proceed, who remembers anything we talked about in regards to audio interfaces? What they are, what they do? Christian?
Audio interfaces are basically, we can say, sound cards, and they have various inputs and outputs on them. They are connected via USB or Firewire or Thunderbolt, and we have them in various shapes and forms. We have consumer ones, we have those with two-ins, two-outs, we have some more professional ones, like I think it's Motul 24, if I remember right. And yeah, they are used in studios. They are also mixers in some cases.
Very excellent summary. So, through software, an interface that isn't a mixer can be the hardware part of a mixer, with the software kind of doing the combining and summing and all of that stuff. But to know that and fully take advantage of it, we need to talk about what a mixer is. And for us to have a sound understanding, of what a mixer is, let's touch on a concept called the signal chain. The signal chain is essentially all the things a signal passes through before it gets to its destination. So you have a microphone that you're speaking in to, but even if that microphone is plugged into your computer, your voice goes through a signal chain. It's a very small one, but it goes through one. You speak, the microphone picks it up. It sends your voice to the microphone preamp, which may be part of your microphone itself, like if it's a headset mic or USB, or it sends it to the preamp on your mixer interface, which is then sent to your computer. So a mixer lets you take a certain number of sources, process them up a little bit, and then combine one or more of them in different ways to get a new signal. So if you think, when we were breaking this down, of mixers as just a whole bunch of things that have their own little signal chains coming together at the end, then you'll be able to kind of have a pretty fair understanding of how this works. So if I were to play music in the background, it would be mixed with my audio. Here, have some music. We'll use this music again later in the demo. In another demo. Now, this microphone I'm on is on a channel. This channel can be used to do all kinds of interesting things, and we'll talk about what those things are in a bit. The music that you're hearing in the background, is it on one channel or two channels?
Two channels, because it is stereo.
Correct. Left and right. And we can do any number of things with that, too. We can move them around, we can change their equalization, all that stuff. But let's start with the microphone channel, because it is one source. It is in the center. It is very easy to break down and how its signal chain works. Most of what happens with the microphone's signal occurs in its channel strip. We've established that everything that is on a mixer is connected to a channel on that mixer, so that if you see that a mixer has 12 channels on it, you can accommodate 12 inputs. Now, those inputs could be grouped in any number of ways, but when a mixer says channel, that means input. So the channel strip is, on an analog mixer, a vertical series of controls that deals with what is on a particular channel. And we're going to work from the top to the bottom in the pecking order, as it were. The first thing you'll see on the top of most channel strips is the trim control for the microphone preamp, should the channel have one. The trim control is how loud the input of the microphone preamp is. If you do not have your mic preamp hot enough for the microphone you're using, no matter what you do with the mixer, you're not going to get a very loud signal from your microphone. If you have the trim control on your microphone preamp too loud, no matter what you do with the rest of the mixer, you're going to have a distorted output from your microphone, and all you'll be doing is turning the distorted signal up and down. Who remembers Jessica doing that when we were talking about gain staging before? Where the preamp was too loud, but her actual channel was very quiet, but it was irrelevant because, well, her preamp was too loud, so that was breaking her signal at the onset. Who remembers that?
Who remembers that?
Yes.
Yes.
You're welcome. Joanna says, thanks for reminding, and if I do this, I'm not going to do it too loud because I don't want to break everyone's ears, but if you hear it getting louder, I'm just turning up the channel, but because the preamp is too loud, it's just making it louder and louder.
But if you turn it down, it's still going to distort.
If you turn it down, and way down, and way down, and way down, and way down, it's still very much distorting.
You sound like an airport loudspeaker.
So, as you can hear, you have to get your gain staging right from the start. You want to make sure that the trim is set for the ideal volume on your mic preamp. The next thing that affects a channel strip on a mixer is the insert jack. Some mixers have inserts on the back, and what they are TRS quarter-inch connectors. On that TRS connector, there's an input and an output. So what you do with an insert is, let's say you have something that, I don't know, we'll just go a little overboard and a little crazy. Let's say you actually have one of the old Antares Auto-Tune processors, like their original units before they went software, the actual outboard pieces, and you want to pitch correct yourself. You would plug that in the insert jack with an insert cable. So the insert connector on the mixer is TRS. The tip is an input to the rest of the channel, and the ring is the output from the channel, from the preamp, excuse me. So instead of out of preamp into the rest of the channel strip where you can adjust your volume and EQ and stuff, it's out of preamp. Then through the insert, the auto-tune processor is inserted, and then after it's done what it does, it goes to the rest of the signal path on your channel. Can you kind of picture that, or is that a little bit much?
That's pretty clear.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can say that at school we learned, and I think it's the best definition, insert is a point of separation where the signal gets separated, goes to the processor, goes back to the channel strip, and continues on its path.
Mm-hmm. Now, some mixers you can specify where the tap point or the insertion, the breakaway point is, but most of the time, it is before anything else. It is preamp, insert, and then the rest of your channel strip. Depending on the complexity of your mixer, any of these things may exist, or none of them may. So if you look at a mixer and you're like, where are the insert jacks? They don't exist. They're on some channel strips, not all. But next thing you may find on a channel strip may be auxiliary sends. We'll talk about sends in a bit. Suffice it to say for now, they're a way to send a certain amount of a signal from your channel strip to something else. So, if I turn this up, now we'll use this one instead because it's shorter. I have a reverb wired to this auxiliary send. I'm barely turning this send up, and it's going to a processor that's giving me reverb. If I turn it up all the way, that's a lot. We don't want that. And so we have an auxiliary send that will let us control the volume of that channel as it's sent, what do you know, to a very specific thing that's connected to the send out on the mixer. Another thing you might see is an equalizer. And the equalizer will let you adjust in its most basic form, bass, mid-range, and treble. So if something has a bit more high end on it than you would like, you could select the high frequency and you could just turn the highs down a little bit or up. You do the same with the mid-range. You could boost it or you could cut it. Some EQs only have two bands, some have three. Some even have what's called a sweepable mid band, which means that you can pick where you want the boost or the cut to occur in the frequency range. And you could find a part that you may want to emphasize or that you may want to reduce. You can kind of zero in on it and get rid of it. But we'll talk about EQ as part of the effects class because there's a lot to say about EQ. But suffice it to say, most mixers have them. Any questions so far?
Mara had a question.
So the, whatever you said, strip.
Channel strip.
That is basically all of the controls that are associated with a certain channel, right?
Right.
Randy had a question.
That distortion effect when you turn too high on the microphone, is that what happens a lot of times when you see, I would say, people that normally don't use PA systems using PA systems and you're like, gosh, that's loud, but I can't understand a word they're saying. Is that what's probably going on there? Is their microphone is set too high?
When I was doing that or when Jessica was doing it with the gain staging? Because all I was just doing was playing with EQ.
When Jessica did it with the gain staging.
Yeah, that's probably what happens. Some people will, oh, that's the mic. Got to turn that all the way up. Well, that's distorted. We'll turn it down here. No. You're just taking the distorted part and sending it somewhere else at a quieter volume. So it's happened, yeah.
Monica has a question as well.
The channel strip, is that one part of the mixer or is that?
Yes, a mixer is usually this, sometimes they're on a rack mount, but just picture this big box thing with lots of columns of buttons and knobs, and sometimes at the bottom, faders that will slide up and down, and sometimes at the bottom, there's just an extra row of knobs that will adjust the volume for each channel. So on the bigger mixers, there are faders, and on the smaller ones, there are knobs. And that's essentially why we're just breaking it down into channel strips for now, because otherwise, if you just look at a mixer at a music store or whatever, and you just see all these buttons and knobs, it's so daunting. It's like, where do I even start?
So would that be one section that you're going over then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, picture this one column. And different mixer manufacturers lay this stuff out a little differently. Like Mackie tends to put their sends on the top, and Allen and Heath and Behringer on their analog mixers tends to put the sends on the bottom.
For the channel part, which he's describing, you're going to have any number of equally identifiable sections. So if you have 12 channels, you'll have 12 columns of buttons that all do close to the same thing.
Thank you.
You mentioned the preamp. And then you mentioned an insert. Now, is the preamp the one with the XLR plug? Is that where it is?
Yes.
Yeah, because on mine there's a jack. So that's the insert, the jack, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Some mixers that have inserts, you'll actually see three connectors that are associated with each channel. You'll see the XLR. You'll see a quarter-inch input that could either be high Z or balanced TRS, just depending on the make of the mixer. See insert documentation for insert name of mixer here. And you'll see another quarter-inch jack for insert. And in some really, really fancy mixers, you'll see another for direct out. So if you want to record or track right off the preamp of a channel into something else, you can do it that way too. But now you're talking way fancy. Suffice it to say, on most, you'll see three jacks per channel. Mic preamp with the XLR, the line slash high Z, and the insert. See how it's kind of coming together? The signal starts at the preamp, and then any number of these things we're talking about could be made available that it would pass through.
Adam.
On those three connectors you mentioned, do they all do the same thing, essentially, allow an insert into the channel after the preamp?
Well, the mic and the line inputs are what goes into the channel in the first place, and then the insert is like, hey, I know you got a thing going here, but I just want to butt right in and add this thing after the preamp and before the rest of this stuff. That's kind of what the insert does. Let's say you have a microphone plugged in and you plug a cable into an insert jack. It will cut that out. There will be nothing that will pass to the rest of the channel strip because you are interrupting the flow of the chain and there's nothing that's returning the audio back to the rest of the channel strip.
But the three types of connectors you mentioned, the XLR, the quarter inch, TRS, balanced, and then just a quarter inch, would those just be three different possibilities of ways of inserting something in depending on what kind of connector you were using?
You could technically use the insert jack as an input, a line level input, and bypass the preamp circuitry altogether. So yes, you could technically do it that way.
Here's a question. How do you know the difference between your balanced TRS and your quarter-inch insert jack?
If you have a mic plugged in and you plug the cable into the insert jack, you're not going to hear the mic anymore.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
And so through process of elimination, you go, well, geez, that's got to be the line in. Or In some cases, if you have a mic plugged in and you plug something in the line input, the mic volume is going to get cut in half because there's a split going on. And it's not an ideal way to run stuff, to have two things connected to one channel at the same time, one through the XLR and one through the quarter inch.
The other thing, too, that he didn't mention but may not always be the case with mixers, some of them with your Hi-Z / balanced TRS input, it's in the middle of the XLR portion of it. So it's either an XLR cable or a TRS cable goes there, not one and in that particular part.
Yeah, combo
sometimes.
Jacks. Yeah.
Yep.
All righty. So we have our EQ. We have, in our most basic form, sends to introduce outboard effects and monitor feeds and things like that. And, of course, we have the pan control. In music, you know, some instruments are more on the left than on the right, or vice versa. Well, it's because when people are mixing in studios, they can use their pan control on their mixer to decide where things happen to be located. Do you want something over here? Do you want it over there? Do you want it kind of in the center? Or do you want it dead center? And if you want it dead center, then you use the pan control to get it there. And that's where they usually are by default, unless you move them.
Francois?
I could never get my panning to work. Could that be the microphone that doesn't support panning, or I just do something wrong with the mixer?
Which mixer do you have?
The Mackie Onyx 820i.
We'll get there. We're not going there yet. And then, of course, you need a way to turn all that up and down after you've added some bass and some treble. Maybe you've panned it around and you've added some other stuff to it. You wanna be able to turn the whole works down or up or whatever. And so at the very bottom, you're going to have a fader or knob that is the master final volume for that particular channel. Now, another part of the channel strip that you'll see on most mixers would be a column of buttons that correspond to the input, and they usually kind of run alongside the fader, and they deal with the routing of the channel.
What do you mean the routing?
I mean its destination. Where's the audio from it going to go? You can send it to many, many places at once. Randy?
I'm just trying to get this straight. So we have a mixer that has the channel strip on it. Does the mixer have these three insert-type jacks you were talking about, or is that a preamp that's plugged into the mixer? I'm just trying to wrap
my
arms
around it. The mixer
does. The mixer does. And then
we're just talking about your simple, self-contained, all-in-one, like your Mackie and your...
In this situation, your mixer has preamps and has inserts in this situation.
Okay. I don't have any of this stuff. It's all new to me, so I'm just trying to make sure I can give it a big hug before I'm done today.
Thanks. We're not even going to talk about broadcast consoles because those are scary beasts. You walk in, there's your fader bank and your cue and a bunch of solder points, and you solder what you want where. They're cool, but no, we're not doing that. So the first button you'll generally see, and they're usually the larger of all the buttons, is a mute button. Mute buttons are good because in a live situation or when you're doing a show or something like a broadcast type thing, or you're going to go to the bathroom or something, it's just nice to keep your volume where it is and you just reach up and you hit your mute button. So if I've got some mics up and I'm recording this and that and the other, and I don't want anybody touching the levels, I just want the signal to... There's your mute button. Next thing you'll see is a solo button. The solo button is interesting because in the headphone output and what's known as the control room output of the mixer, you hear just those things that are soloed. So, by default, on most mixers, because, you know, somebody will find the exception. They do exist, so it's not news. They'll just find it, just because. By default, when you are not soloing anything, you will hear your main mix that you're sending out to your main outputs in your headphones or your control room. But the minute you press one of the solo buttons down, that switches off in favor of just hearing the thing you're soloing.
Francois has a question.
Actually, not a question, just a big tip. If something just doesn't want to work, check your solo button. I spent so much time on trying to figure out why I couldn't talk and stuff, and the solo button was on.
Yep.
Solos and mutes. Always check your solos and mutes, because you never know like what's going on sometimes.
And most mixers do their solo PFL. Now, what the heck's PFL? It's pre-fader listen. That means what comes in goes out. Upshot of having PFL solo is that you, as a blind person, can set levels and set your gain staging, and you can test your mic preamp of a channel before you feed it into the rest of the channel strip, because you can solo PFL, and you can start talking and turning things up and up, and oh, it's distorted. Go back. Okay, there we go. That sounds good. And then you know that then if it's distorted or anything else happens or there's noise or whatever, it's somewhere else and that you've got the preamp part working. That's good. You're set. So that's the cool thing about PFL Solo. You can check stuff regardless if it's muted, regardless of where the fader position is, regardless of the pan. What comes in goes out. There it is.
Mar has a question.
I guess this would be related because one of my greatest difficulties is finding someone that understands these things to help me figure out the layout of them. And I'd just be interested in knowing, maybe it's a whole different study group or a whole different thing, but what different people do, maybe we can even submit it to the mailing list, to get these things accessible to us and to help us figure out the configuration of the buttons.
I think that is a really cool topic for Audio Discuss,
yes,
in my opinion.
Is.
Because there's a lot of cool people out there that have came up with some pretty innovative things.
And there's people that have written layouts and notes and things like that that may be willing to share. So asking places like Audio Discuss would be really, really good resources for stuff like that, especially if you're thinking about getting anything.
Now we've got our mutes and our solos. Now we get into subgroups. What in the heck is a subgroup? Well, a subgroup is a way of picking certain channels and only certain channels and sending them somewhere. Subgroups generally, generally, because that's the thing, are post everything. Post EQ, post pan, post fade. Everything on a channel strip that can be done with to for a signal is done to it with the result sent to the subgroup, just like it'd be sent to the main mix. You press the subgroup you want the channel routed to, and you're good. So let's say, hypothetically, in a music situation, you have a big mixer, and you've got all kinds of instruments, a soloist, and maybe a backing choir. Well, you want the soloist, who's singing, directly mic'd, and the music, let's say, going through a set of speakers. Let's say they're on a subgroup. So we've got the microphone routed to the subgroup, and we've got all the instruments that are mic'd up or directly connected to the mixer on the subgroup. But let's say we have a recorder, and the recorder's on the main mix, and let's say there's a couple of microphones that are overheads for the choir or the backing vocals or whatever, or they're room mics for the audience to get the, yeah, woo, you know, yay, more, encore, whatever, stuff. You wouldn't want to put those in the subgroup because then you're going to introduce feedback. But you might want to blend those in with all the direct stuff for the recording. And those are where subgroups are useful. If you want certain channels to go somewhere, but not all channels, then you could use that. Who is into doing streams, internet broadcasts, and so on?
Johannes is her.
I do a few bits and bobs.
All right. Good for y'all. So a subgroup would be kind of cool for a broadcast setup because you could do cool things like bring in a co-host on something like Team Talk, and you could put the device that Team Talk is pulling from on a subgroup so that you could give them the music and your microphone, but send to the stream the music, microphone, and Team Talk. Team Talk doesn't need to hear Team Talk. That's bad. That gets very annoying and it's very distracting. Would you agree?
You can always demo that in a very... Yeah, that.
So that's the thing. That's why I was hoping someone would speak up.
Yay!
Good for you.
I'm lost after the strip of channel buttons. I'm just wondering whether my mixer is too cheap, possibly.
No. If it does what you need it to do, that's what matters.
You know, because I can't recognize the other ones you're talking about.
Well, you may not have any subgroups.
Right. Okay.
It's all right.
And do you think you might indicate what type of mixers have these or not really?
No, there's... Because usually there's like mixers that are just sort of divided into like your powered mixer, like your PA type mixer where you have a built-in amp in it. And so you have a basic mixer and then speaker connectors on the back. And then you have like your regular standard, either small or large form factor console type mixer with just the inputs, maybe the processing in the form of EQs, panning, things like that, and your sends and your other routing. And then you have your broadcast consoles, which are literally just big old patch bays pretty much. And you solder or socket or what have you things on them that you want in the way you want them. And you just have at it and do what you do, and you buy channel strips like for microphones, and you put those in a rack away, far, far away.
So all the morning show host has to do is come in and turn on the microphone and talk to people and say stupid stuff
and have like the yuppie interns in the back laughing at him and stuff. And that's all he has to really worry about. You know, the actual why it sounds the way it sounds is completely something he will never even understand or be able to do anything about, even if he did.
Monica?
So do, Derek, do you and Jessica have mixers, X or interfaces? And if so, what?
We're bad people to ask, and the reason we're bad people to ask is because we do, but they're not the kinds of things you'd want to get started on. Well, that's not true in a way. My Mackie 1202 is a very cool mixer that I've had since I was 14, and it's a great board to learn on.
Now, to be fair, Derek's mixer is a lot more traditional than mine. That's kind of why I'm laughing right now.
Yeah. Well, no, well, that one is, but the Behringer X32 producer is not.
Ugh, that thing.
The Behringer X32 producer is a digital mixer wherein you have a very large channel strip with lots of everything on it, like 16 buses and we'll get to those, buses / sends / subgroups, whatever, depending on how you set them to be, what you tell them to be.
Blow me.
There's EQ, gate, compression, all in this really big channel strip, and you have this row of channel select buttons, and you press the channel select button, and then the controls apply themselves to what you've selected. So it is not something that I'd be like, okay, everybody, let's learn how to use a mixer on this thing. No.
No.
Nope. No, no, no.
His mixer is very big and confusing, and I would, unless you're very good at grasping the knowledge of mixers quickly, I would not recommend that as your starting mixer.
I have an audio box, which is much simpler.
That's not a mixer. That's an interface.
Well, yeah, but it would be a good starter interface. It's what I started on.
Yeah. An audio box is good. A Focusrite, a lot of the Focusrite, the smaller ones are good. The 2i2s, 2i4s.
I'm kind of looking at either the Native Instruments audio control, or the audio complete audio 6, whatever that thing is. And the Behringer Euphoria is interesting, the 404, because there's four mic preamps in it. And those mic pre's have inserts. So like if you have something like a DBX 286, which is like it's an interesting little channel strip because it has an EQ, a compressor, and a gate expander. Compressor all in one rack space. You could use the Midas Pre and the Euphoria, put that in line as an insert, and for $200, you have three really cool mic pre's, or you have four really cool mic pre's, and for another $100 or so, you have some outboard processing on one of the channels, and it all just goes into your, like, I don't know, there's a lot of cool starter options just depending on what you're trying to pull off. And if you have a decent mixer and you just want two in, two out from a computer and you want it clean and balanced, then like for $60 or $70, whatever you find them at, you can get a Lexicon Alpha. I mean, there's so many cool little like sub $300 options for all kinds of different things.
Carrie and I were actually looking at the Euphoria the other day because we were just interested in it. And so we were looking at that on Sweetwater and just seeing all the different things. If you need a thing with lots of inputs, that is your thing.
Are people understanding what we mean by some of these terms? Like, for example, do people understand what an insert is? Because it's pointless us flying off into the stratospheres of sends and subgroups if some people are still struggling with the concepts we've already covered. So is everyone clear what an insert is?
I think Derek just went through them.
Yeah, well, he did. I was just trying to make sure everyone understands what they are.
Like, do you guys understand the difference between an insert and a preamp? Or a channel?
No.
The channel's the thing that makes up all the stuff. The preamp is part of it. The insert is part of it. The EQ, the sends, the routing, all that junk, part of it.
So the preamp is the first part, as he said, the top of the channel. If, like, where the signal starts and goes through in the channel, right? The insert, which everyone doesn't always have, will pick up the signal from the preamp and send it through its little stuff, processing, whatever, before sending it back out through the remainder of the channel. So it basically stops the signal from going through the channel, picks it up itself, processes it, and puts it back through the channel.
And you can run that through anything you want. You can run it through an outboard compressor or pitch corrector type device or EQ that's more powerful than the one on your mixer. Or if you're really cheap, you can plug it halfway in to make tip to ring so that you get a direct output and record it somewhere else, because that's not weird, but it works. There's all kinds of stuff you can do with an insert jack. Some advertised and some not.
Does that help a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. Because basically without an insert, the stuff would just keep going through the remainder of the channel, through your EQ, through your pan, through whatever. So if you need to put stuff like effects and things on your channel, most times you would use an insert of some fashion.
Well, insert them.
Mono effects.
But. Right. You would insert them, as Justin said. So.
Could you talk just a little bit about what the difference between an insert and a send is then?
I sure will. So a send is an output on your mixer that lets you create your own form of submix. In other words, a mix within a mix. A mixer can make multiple mixes of a number of audio signals. It isn't just a bunch of inputs and one output. You can make multiple mixes. For example, I have a mix of Team Talk and what I'm sending Team Talk that I'm listening to. That's a mix. You hear everything I'm sending, but you do not hear Team Talk coming back. That's another mix. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I'm having a little bit of trouble putting it back with what you said earlier. I understood you to say that you plug the microphone into the XLR, and then it goes into the insert, which does something whatever to it, and then it goes back into the channel. And then I thought you said where you did the echo thing, that you then sent it out to an echo, the reverb thing, I mean. Mm-hmm. You sent it out and back, and you said that was a send, and then you moved it, got it back and moved it on. So I'm not quite understanding what the difference was. The insert went out and came back after having done something. The send went out and came back after having done something. And it would seem like those were kind of two examples of the same thing, but apparently they're not.
Okay, I see the missing piece.
Yeah.
I see the missing piece. This is easy to fix. All right, cool. All right, so a send is an output on the mixer, and across each channel strip, or on each channel strip, there is a send knob. There can be multiple sends. And you would turn that send up, and let's say there's a reverb connected to it. I'm turning the send up, but there's no reverb. Why is there no reverb? Because I'm just turning the send to the reverb up. Didn't say the reverb itself was up. I didn't say the processor that had the reverb on it was up. I'm simply turning the send that goes to it up. On most mixers that have sends, you have a proportional number of returns. And a return is different than a channel in that it is a stereo input that has no processing on it. No EQ, it doesn't have the ability to go into any sends, it doesn't have inserts, it doesn't have anything. It is a set of inputs with a volume. Now, I've got the send to the reverb up, but I don't have the return the reverb is on up. Does that make sense? So yeah, I'm sending out, but it's not coming back. Can you see where I'm going with this?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
But you're getting there, I think.
We're getting there. So I have a volume, I have a send control, and I can control the amount of output that I'm throwing at this send. But you don't hear it. You don't hear any difference as I'm sitting here moving this up and down, because that's just the send part. The other half of the trick with these mixers is the return. The return is like another channel, kind of. It's a set of inputs.
It's a half channel.
But it's like a half channel. Yeah, it's a set of inputs, but there's no processing on them. No EQ, no inserts, no panning, left and right, return. It is a set of inputs with a volume knob that goes up and down. So I'm sending reverb. Anything could be on this return, but right now reverb is. So I'm sending to it, but the return's all the way down. You can have anything you want on a send at all, anything at all. Doesn't matter. But if the thing that the send is connected to isn't on, it's irrelevant.
Yeah. Everything that he's inserted in his channel strip or whatever, he's sending it to the send that's supposed to send it back to the
return
destination, but the destination isn't on or down in this case. So there's nothing for it to return back to.
And a return isn't linked to a send. So like you could put a CD player in a return or an, like a breakout cable that's, you know, 2 TS quarter to 1 TRS eighth and connect your iPhone to a return. If you know you're not going to EQ it or anything, you just want to be able to turn it up or down. You could use a return for any number of things. It's just a line input. So I've got this send to this reverb all the way up, but watch what happens when I reach over here and I turn the return up. Now look, now we got some reverb because the send is up and the return is up. Generally what I do is I leave my returns up and I turn the send down. And I will show you why I do that. So I'm going to count to 5. And on 5, I'm going to, on the number 5, I'm going to turn up the send to add reverb to the number 5. And I want to let you hear that. Then I'm going to leave the send up and turn the return up when I count to 5 and show you the difference of gain staging with sends and returns. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 versus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Did you hear the difference?
Yeah, the reverb came at the end of 4, so the tail came.
Mm-hmm, because I was always sending. I was sending the whole time, but just the return was down. So now one of the major difference between subgroups and sends is that subgroups generally are pairs of outputs, and the channel is either routed to them or it is not. And the fader controls the volume of the channel across the main and across subgroups. So off, on, it's there, it isn't, so on and so on. And a send gives you an independent volume control.
I've got the send bit, but as Adam was saying, the insert, is that connected to a different processor or something? Or is that connected to your reverb?
The insert can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, because Adam was, and I was thinking, these sound like the same sort of thing, the insert and the...
This mixer doesn't... See, I'm really sad. Well, not really, because it saves a lot of space. But this mixer doesn't have hardware insert jacks. I do it through the software in the mixer, but... otherwise, I would just plug something in and show you. But picture, let's go back to the signal chain example. So let's just say you have a mixer with that. What it's capable of is preamp, an EQ, panning, and volume. That's what it can do. Let's say you have one of the original old Antares autotune units. If you put it in the insert, what happens with that signal and that channel strip is that it's preamp, pitch correction, EQ, pan, and volume. So right after the preamp, before anything else, before the rest of the channel strip sees what the preamp's done, the pitch correction would get the sound from the preamp to deal with. Does that make sense? Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the next step.
The other thing to remember, too, is that not every mixer has an insert jack, like Derek said, or doesn't support them at all.
Some mixers have tons of subgroups. Some mixers have one. Some mixers don't have any of them.
But you're sending the pitch, and then you started talking about, you know, I mean, the pitch signal is coming from the insert into the processor and back out. And then you started speaking about sends.
Yeah, so what if you want to add reverb? Okay, so what if you wanted to add reverb to your pitch-corrected signal? You are T-painful. You are awesome. And you are, like, doing your vocal, and it's all pitch-corrected, and you're awesome, and you want to add, like, a delay or something to it. And you have another piece of equipment that'll do that. You can take that pitch-corrected signal, turn the send up and then have your other effects on the return, which you would turn up. And then in the mixer, you've gotten all that stuff going. Most of this is handled through software these days, but just in that example.
But that's a different processor, the reverb.
Yes.
Right. So the pitch correction is on the insert.
Yes.
And the reverb gets its audio from the send.
Okay.
And that's why when you walk into like studios or you see pictures of old studios and they have like racks and racks and racks of equipment, it's because they have their console and then on the sends and the inserts and subgroups of things, they have all this stuff to change the signal in all kinds of fun and interesting ways.
Because remember, an effects processor in general needs to get a signal from something. So in the simpler term that Derek was mentioning where he's sending all this stuff to the reverb, you're just sending a signal to a processor that's connected to your, you know, your console. But in the case of the insert, it's having to grab something from a different source and then send it back to your console. So the insert is in between the preamp itself and the remainder of the channel to grab that.
So the subgroup then takes two channels or more. Is that correct?
The subgroup is two outputs.
Yeah, the subgroup is a pair of outputs, and a send isn't, I believe.
Is it, in that sense, the output the same as... What's the difference between an output and a channel then?
Well, yeah, you never mentioned output, that part.
Yeah, the output is the results, like of you get all these inputs and you hook them in your mixer, and then the things that come out of the outputs would be the audio you want combined, however you want it.
Okay, but you'd have to have the output from two different channels. Is that correct?
So if I play my music. Where's my music? It's over here. My music's. Hey. Excuse me. Where did you go? Or did it just... I was afraid my music player crashed. Okay. Music. There we go. Cool. Music's on a channel strip. Or actually two of them. Ha. And the mic's on one. The output from my mixer that you hear has a mix of the music, and myself, at the volumes that I want. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfectly good sense, but it's mixing all three of those channels then, correct?
Right.
Yes.
But...
So the output result that comes back to you is the sum of everything mixed.
To that output.
Yes.
But here's the thing. I have other outputs. Remember that send I was talking about? That send isn't getting any love right now. There's nothing going to it. Because if I had that, let's do it. Can I? Have my... Yes, I can. Oh, good. Now, the send has a little bit of love because my voice is going to it. So now we're mixing four sources. We're mixing to your output. There's your there's the music, there's my microphone, and there's the return from the reverb. You see?
Yes.
All right, so that's one output that you're hearing, or one pair of outputs. The send, the only thing that's on the send is my voice. So that's another output that just has my voice on it. And that's why mixers are so powerful. You can do things called submixes, and that's exactly what's going on here. I have three submixes on this mixer right now. The mix I'm hearing, which is everything I'm sending you plus Team Talk. The mix that you're getting, which is me, the return with the reverb on it, and the music, and the mix that just simply has me at a very low volume, that the reverb receives. It's very powerful. And this kind of thing is something I'm doing that one of the smaller form factor mixers could do. Even something like, you know, the Onyx 802 or whatever it was, Francois, that you had,
the
could do this if you had an 820, yeah. If you had an effects processor. This kind of connectivity exists. We're not doing anything particularly elaborate.
Monica had a question, and then Christian.
So, Derek, as you're hearing all these things, is all of these coming back into your ears?
Yes.
And if so, how do you concentrate on being able to speak at a reasonably understandable level? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Because everything's on a fader. Everything can be mixed. I can turn the music up by pushing it up. Or I can turn it down.
Now, the key thing to note here, while he's doing that, he could have either done that in both his headphones and ours, or he could turn it up on our mix and we're hearing it really loud, but he's hearing it really, 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 really soft because it's not turned up on his submix.
Well, I didn't wire it up that way because I could see myself easily doing that if I wasn't careful, but it could be wired that way. And why would that be useful? Why would you want that? Why would you want that kind of configuration where you would be making a mix of something you wouldn't even hear? That doesn't make sense, or does it? I would argue that it actually could make perfect sense, because what if you're doing an interview? What if you're doing an interview on a station, let's say, and you have a mix that people are listening to, that you're sending your interviewer, or your interviewee, rather. I would make that mix and set it up in mono on a send that is sent, that is set to be pre-fade. What the heck is pre-fade? Why would you want to switch a send from pre-fade to post-fade? What's the point? Why add that extra little bit of confusion in the works? You don't have to, but it's there if you need it. So send, this is what blows people's brains every semester, and I haven't figured out a way to explain this in a way that is just like magical yet. Ascend, yeah, okay. Ascend is a volume, and it goes and sends audio to a destination, and that's great, and that's wonderful. But that send can be post-fade or pre-fade. So right now, you agree that I have this volume control, and I can send out however much reverb I want, or how much of a signal I want to go into the reverb. I could have a very small amount of it, or I could have a lot of it just by raising or lowering this volume here. Right? You got that? Everybody still with me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Now, we have the mic fader for the channel strip, the main fader on the channel strip. I have this proportion set up, this amount of me to the amount of reverb you're hearing. That's great. I can turn that whole thing down and it stays proportional, or I can turn it up and it stays proportional. All right, you see, it's low, but it's still the same ratio of me to the reverb, or loud, and it's still the same ratio to me and the reverb. That is cool because that send is post-fade, which means, yes, there are two things that impact the volume of a channel on its respective send. Its send volume and the fader of the channel itself. Pre-fade means it does not care how loud the channel's fader is. It's going to just be at the volume as dictated by the send volume. That has its advantages and its disadvantages. But on most mixers, it's switchable. Now, if I can remember how on this one, I'll show you what this means, what the implications are with an effect like this. Let's see if I remember. I haven't done this in a while. think if I... So what I have now is this amount of reverb that you hear in the background to the amount of me that you hear. And that's fine. But I'm going to start turning down the fader now. This send is pre-fade. So the fader has nothing whatsoever to do with what's being sent to the reverb. So can you tell what's happening as I do this? As I slowly turn this fader down, how would you describe what's happening now?
Mar?
Sounds like you're walking away from me.
Yep, because it's just the reverb. It's just the reverb. That's the only thing left, because I'm turning the fader of the channel down, but the send is pre-fade. It doesn't care. It doesn't care at all. What? If I switch this from pre-fade to post-fade, and then I do the same thing, and I start turning this down, and I start turning this down, and I continue to turn this down, what's happening now? Do you see the difference between pre and post fade on a send? See?
Interesting.
See, the whole thing stays proportional.
The
so
whole
right
thing's
now,
coming
very,
down.
Yeah, right now I'm very quiet. If I switch to pre fade right now, what's going to happen is, you hear the difference?
Lucas says to make it more obvious, he's a delay.
Okay. It's a good idea. I got to find one. All right. Sure. Let's find a delay. Because why not? We're all friends here. We can throw fun things in the works, changing effects. Effects processor one. And why isn't it changing effects? I need to change effects. Okay. Okay, well, we're getting somewhere. We've changed it to two. All right. Come on. Delay. Give me a delay. You know you want to. Come on. Ah. Well, there's a combo.
There's your delay.
I need I need something more obvious, though.
Sorry.
No, that's funny. I'm just, that's, well, you know, different reverb types. You get a sneak peek at the X32's effects on it.
He said, or a pitched version of himself, so you have two discrete use.
Two discrete me's, yeah. Well, it's, I can do that too. We'll get to whatever I come to first. How's that? Something that's discrete enough, because, come on. A bunch of EQs and limiters and all kinds of things in this effects block. Come on, give me a delay. It's a simple request. Jerk. There's a chorus. That's nice.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
Well, there's a flanger.
Uh-huh.
Or is that a phaser?
It's a phaser. And there's a bunch of amp sims.
Ugh.
And there's a sub-octave harmonic exciter, and I need something that's obvious. Okay, that'll work.
There you go. There.
It's a combo effect. It's reverb and delay. So that'll work. Best of both worlds. All right, cool. What's this one, though? Is this just... I should have just... There we go. Chorus delay. That's very obvious. All right, cool. We'll go with that. Okay, now I got to get back to the sends tab of that channel. Which is over here. On analog boards, there's a button to switch sends between pre and post fade, by the way. It's not a menu. 3, 4, 5, 6. Ding. All right. Now. All right. Okay, so this is... What is this? Is, as I turn this up, pre or post fade? Turning it down. What is this? Pre or post?
Yeah, I think.
Post.
Correct.
It is post.
Ignoring a phone call?
Yeah, it's post.
What happened?
All right. So.
There you are.
Now we're going to switch this. And. Switch? Are you going to switch? Or did I break it? I may have broken it. Oh no. Crap. All right. Pre or post? We're still post. You guys are correct. Tap point? Change.
All right. Now.
Okay. So. We have this now. And is this pre or post? Now that I actually know what I'm doing.
The fader is all the way down.
That's what's happening right now. The fader is all the way down. So the send is pre or post fade right now?
They're saying pre fade.
Correct. If I change it to post fade, it does that. And post fade, change plays. Much appreciated.
Did you also notice when he was pre-fade, when he was all the way down, how like he started to get really phasey and stuff because the effect was kind of
way louder than the original, way louder than the dry signal. Yeah. So why would we want?
Yeah, it almost sounded like the stereo switched or something. Sorry to interrupt.
That was just part of the effect. I was just doing that because it was a very obvious thing. Why would we want that in a situation like that's real, like an actual music situation or a broadcast situation? Well, what if we had a submix on a pre-fade send, and we were going to do something silly? Let's just be ridiculous. I did this last year, and people thought it was kind of hilarious. We use the same music again because we can. It's called "Time to Wake Up" by Andre Louis. There we go. All right. And we're going to do a deal where we're going to pretend this is like a radio show. And I am a very, 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 shall we say, interesting individual who is doing an interview of a person. And they are waiting on Skype or Team Talk or whatever. And they have the little submix from a pre-fade send. I'm going to pretend to do the show. And you're going to hear the show. But I'm actually going to make a submix that they might hear and play that back and see what differences you notice. So here we go. We're going to pretend like this is the show with the other submix being recorded off in the way that I can do that. All right, so here we go. Fake show time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blindy Radio, BLIN.DE is our website. The station's good for you and me because none of us can see. Oh, boy, good times. So today, I have a friend of mine on standby for an interview. His name is Oscar Mayer, and he is a person who has decided to take wiener dogs and other dogs of a similar form factor and train them to be guide dogs. And he has started PGDB, Portable Guide Dogs for the Blind. He thinks that the age of mobilization and miniaturization should be applied to our canine navigation aid type device things that we can have. And so that is what he is doing. And we're going to talk to him for the next way too long. And, hope that you'll listen to it. Oh, boy. All right. Now, I've actually heard shows done that poorly with such bizarre things because the internet is just strange. Now, this submix that he heard, let's listen to it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blindy Radio, BLIN. Now, what do you notice about it? Our website. The station's good for you and me because none of us can see. Oh, boy, good times. So today, I have a friend of mine on standby for an interview. So what are you noticing about the submix that's different than when I was just being stupid and dumb?
It's in mono.
Yep. You're right.
Wiener dogs and other dogs of a similar form factor and train them to be guide dogs. And he has started PGDB, Portable Guide Dogs for the Blind. He thinks that the age of mobilization and miniaturization should be applied to our canine navigation aid type device things that we can have. And
the level sounds like it's about half as much as well.
Yep.
For the next way too long. And hope that you'll listen to it.
Now listen to this part.
Well, I know that intro wasn't very good, but this song's going to finish and then we're going to say stuff. and then you're gonna say stuff, and hopefully this will be better than my intro. Yay, or some such crap. Yeah, that. What's the difference there?
Sorry, we didn't hear you say all that before.
That's the point. That's exactly the point.
So he had his little submix all mixed off to his friend, and he was talking to his friend in the background while the rest of us were hearing his show, which did not have him talking that extra bit to his friend.
Because I pulled the fader all the way down, but it was a pre-fade send, so they were still hearing it. So I could talk to the non-existent, you know, portable guide dogs person.
Gianluca had something to say.
So yeah, I don't know if you can hear me. I hope you can.
Yep, okay. He's definitely post-fade. He's working.
So yeah, the point here is like when you have it like post-fade, you have like imagine one knob or one volume fader or whatever you want. One volume thing controlling two things. His volume and what he's sending it to. So the send, the other track. When you have it pre-fade, his volume controls only one thing, that is his volume. The send is not affected by that fader. So you're like separating the two kind of volume you have. Like when it's post-fade, they are linked. Like when you turn you down, you turn also the send down because it's getting less signal.
Right.
Not because you're turning down the volume of the send. That's another thing, but not to confuse it. Like it's turning the signal down. And so it's sending less stuff to the other part. So the receiver, that is the thing. When it is pre, it's just controlling himself. The receiver is still receiving the same amount of signal. That signal, they're not linked. So post is linked together. Pre is not. I don't know if it makes any more clear or any more confusing.
They're still sort of linked together because with post fade.
Well, post fade, they are linked together.
Yeah, but pre-fade
they're
is not at
not.
All.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Post fade links them. Pre-fade does not. So you have two different things. Pre-fade gets the signal on its own before your fade. That's why it's pre-fade, right? Because it's before the fade. Post-fade is after. So if you fade it, you get also fade in the send, if I made myself clear. Because probably this is the difference that people need to understand. That's why we could not hear himself talking about, you know, the intro, you know, after I did this, I say this, and you do this, after the intro part. We couldn't hear him because he unlinked, right, himself. And so he turned himself down only from us, but not for his imaginary friend, the interviewed person.
Now, what gets really cool about these send things is that you can have pre or post per channel. So you can do crazy stuff like, say, all right, I do an internet show, my phone hybrid. So when I take calls, the music is pre-fade and it's very low, but the microphone is post-fade. So if I'm playing a song when someone calls in, they will get the song in the very, very background. If I just answer, I don't screen it, I just put it through. And that level is going to stay the same no matter if I'm talking or not, because I would obviously have the music louder if I'm not talking. And quiet if I am talking. But on the phone, it's going to stay the same no matter what. But the mic is post-fade on the phone, and that's where it gets cool and kind of crazy. And that's why sends are powerful.
Another less broadcast-oriented example of pre- and post-fade sends is audio dramas. So you have a bunch of people. Let's say we're at a soap opera wedding, and it's a radio soap. And all our protagonists are situated in a church. And we have the reverb to simulate the church, and all their different mic channels are sent to this reverb. Now, we want people to pace the church in nervous anticipation, so we want them to walk further away and closer to our perspective. You can't do that accurately. You can't simulate it accurately with a post-fade send. You can increase the amount of reverberation a voice has, but the voice stays at the same level. You turn the voice down, the reverb decreases in proportion. That's not how real life works. It works the way Derek demonstrated before, where if I walk away from you, The direct sound you hear from my voice becomes less, but the sound reflecting off the walls back to you remains pretty much the same to all intents and purposes. And so having everyone sent to this reverb by Prefade Sense enables you to position them in the room as you want them.
And the concept of sense is one that is important to try and grasp, because even if you don't have a mixer, you do have sense in Reaper from a software perspective.
And they work the same way. Switchable pre or post.
Randy, have a question.
Yes.
So is a send and an input the same thing, or I'm a little confused on that. And then when you add reverb in, that's in essence doing a live effect, right? You could edit and add reverb in with an effect on Goldwave or Reaper later. Am I looking at that correctly?
Correct.
I have an analogy for sends, if I may.
Send out, yeah.
Okay. You get in a car. You drive along. And you go through a drive-through McDonald's. And you carry on your way. The McDonald's is en route. You've inserted it into your route. It's a stop along your route. It's an insert. You've inserted a burger into your route without having to have made any deviations. Now let's say you want to go pick up a friend, or you want to go get Mexican, and there isn't a drive-through Mexican. You would have to deviate off your main route, shunt yourself somewhere else to go pick up a friend, to go pick up a Mexican, and then rejoin the main route. That's ascend. It's adding a branch to your single path, signal path, that loops back and joins the main channel. So in this instance,
really close.
You send yourself off the main route, off the straight signal path, to get some reverb, and you come back and you rejoin the main route all reverbed up.
Well, okay. The send part is the going. The coming back is the return.
So well, yeah, sends really and return. Close. I was considering them as a whole, but yeah. The rejoining the route is what the reverb sends back out.
But I just wanted to clarify that that's really close, but the to break it down is to say the splitting.
Is everything breaking for everybody else, or is it just me and my crazy wireless?
Just you.
So an input is anything that is fed into the mixer. So you have a mic input, you plug your mic into it, that input goes to the preamp and all the other things we've discussed.
So, like, Derek's voice would be the input because it's coming through the microwave and microphone, not wave. and then the sends are the kind of, I guess what I'm terming the effects that are sent and returned into the input. Is that a fair statement?
Derek speaks into the microphone. That goes,
hello.
The electrical signal goes along the microphone cable into the input of his mixer. It's a teeny tiny voltage. So it's increased by the preamp, which you can adjust the level of if you have a preamp trim. You may then wish to send that preamplified signal off to a reverb. So send. It shunts off after preamplification to the reverb and then is returned to the signal path. You may then wish to, let's say, we won't go into compressors. You may then wish to pitch shift the whole thing down. So continuing along the signal path, you then have a pitch shifter inserted into the signal path. So Derek's voice passes through it and thence to the output, which goes to his headphones, which goes to monitor speakers, which goes to whatever. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Sends are really confusing. Guys, don't feel alone. I didn't actually really grasp them until I played around with hardware things and could actually physically see where they go. So some of you may find it better to understand if you ever get the chance to physically see some of this stuff.
The thing about sends is it's all about more control. It decides how much of what goes where. Maybe you only want a little bit of reverb. Maybe you want a lot of reverb. But you can't really have, in general, a little bit of EQ, you wouldn't want that, or a lot of EQ, or a little bit of compression, or a lot of compression, or a little bit of pitch shifting, or a lot of pitch shifting, you want it done or not, which is why inserts are better than that. The whole signal gets fed through it, and the whole signal gets fed out of it. But with sends, you decide how much goes where.
The other thing sends are good for, and we'll cover that more on a software perspective, but they're good for freeing up resources. So you could put a whole bunch of reverbs on a whole bunch of tracks and just turn them up or down respectively, or you could just send all your tracks to a send and turn the reverb up or down for each track. But we'll explain later why that is really process intensive.
Does everybody have a reasonable grasp of the signal path?
Christian.
So here is... So I must say the summary of signal path, how it goes, right? So here it is, how it goes. Microphone, then preamp, then you have gain level, then insert point, then after the insert you have equalizers, then you have band control, and then you have buttons. You have, they go along those knobs, so buttons are mute, solo, and mute and solo, and there down we have the main fader that are important points.
Yeah, basically that's how the signal ultimately goes. It goes from your
indeed
microphone or from your
now what I have for you all is a situation where an insert and a send are combined. As we discussed before, the pitch effect is on the inserts, and the reverb liveth on the send. Thus, these two combine to find myself sounding like this. With the return from the reverb and the microphone as processed by the TC Helicon VoiceWorks Plus sent to a subgroup which you can hear. Post-fade, of course.
And that's all a great deal of fun.
That's awesome.
So, there you go. Hopefully that's helped. And hopefully when you guys look at mixers, you'll be able to sort of understand kind of how they're all broken down.
Mar?
How do you deal with mixers that have software control programs?
Well, depends on the mixer. Depends on the mixer. Depends on what you're trying to do with the program. Most mixers are just analog pieces of equipment. They may have interfaces, and this is where Jessica can kind of sum the two up. Some mixers may have interfaces built in where you can record direct from each channel into the computer and then mix it later. Some of the interfaces are simple two in, two out type things where you can play into a channel from your mixer, do the USB, and what can be recorded is, say, the main mix. And some of them can do both with some minor compromises.
Is this where I talk? Oh, right. So, Derek's right. As he mentioned, you know, the mixers... Sorry, hold on. There you go. The mixers, they mix stuff together, and generally you hook things to your mixer, like interfaces or speakers or whatever it is that you're mixing things to. But sometimes, and then you have the interface like Justin's, the regular sort of interface like Justin's or
any number of other USB interfaces or FireWire interfaces or even sound cards that just have their couple set of inputs or couple set of outputs, and you can just send stuff to them. Or you have interfaces like mine. I have what's called the Motu Audio Express, and it's essentially a box that is an interface. It totally is an audio interface. It connects via FireWire or USB. But what makes this interface kind of interesting is that it has, hold on, how many? Six inputs and either four pairs of stereo outputs or eight individual outputs. So what does that mean? Essentially means I have a tiny little mixer in my interface, because my four pairs of outputs are the main output, which is what I'm talking, like where everything is being mixed to right now, sort of. Like I can mute this microphone. Anyway. So there's the main output, which is where you would set monitors or speakers or whatever. I also have a set of analog outputs, so you would put analog devices or other cards or whatever, things that are going to take a, you know, throw out another signal into your mixer. I have headphone outputs, obviously, and then I have my SPDIF outputs, which you didn't really talk about much, but it's essentially a digital
connection. Guys, we could have made a semester connection out of essentials, to be honest. I mean, really, we could have, because we didn't even have time to talk about speakers and calibrating thing, you know, okay, for listening, and we just didn't.
The reason I bring up this point about my interface and why Derek wanted me to talk about it, you're talking about subgroups, which I guess is the same as a bus in this case.
Yeah, a bus is basically an output path. Most interface or most mixers kind of link subgroups and buses together until you hit Mackie's sort of 1202s and things. And it's like 1202, two buses. Well, yeah, kind of. But you have the main bus and the auxiliary bus. And the auxiliary bus exists when you mute something. It goes to the auxiliary bus. So you can't have it on two destinations. You can't use the aux bus as a subgroup. And that's where they really mess with your brain. And that's why you have to be really careful when you're reading this junk. And you have to, you know, kind of, okay, well, it says this many buses, so it says this many sends. And then there's the control and the main. So you subtract those two out and then you kind of guess. So you always have to get a little bit more than it sounds like you need to get what you actually do need.
So this same interface has, as I said, the four outputs that I can send every single channel to independently. So this same mic that I'm talking to you, for instance, I right now have my headphones mirroring my mains. I won't go into that so much, but I can essentially do that with this interface. And so my headphones are hearing whatever I decide to hear through the main outs. But I could go to my headphone mix alone and mute. Oops, hold on. Oh, I already had it muted. That makes a lot of sense. So I could mute myself on my headphones and not hear myself, theoretically. I actually can still hear myself because I forgot to fix something. But if I had it the right way, I would not hear myself.
No, it's doing what it's supposed to do, because you're hearing, like, because I can do that trick too. I can mute myself but still hear myself, because I can solo multiple things. I can this is where digital,
right, but it's not soloing it, though. That's what I was trying to get at,
right?
So
but you can hear two things coming from two signal paths at the same time,
right? And well, so my headphones are following.
Is everyone following?
That's what I was saying, like I messed it up because I forgot to uncheck something. My headphones are essentially following a different signal path, but they can have their own signal path.
That's a Motu function. That's not a...
That's a Motu function. I promise. That's not an every mixer function. So what I was trying to say, though, with these subgroups is that if I had it set up right, which I didn't because I fail, I would not be able to hear myself right now if I had muted my microphone from my headphones, but you guys would still be able to hear me. Now, vice versa, I can put my headphones microphone back on, and I can still hear myself just fine. Thing I said until I came back, right? Yes, good. So that same channel I muted on your mix, but I didn't mute on my headphone mix.
She's going to press something and it's going to send a fireworks display up somewhere. It's going to be fun.
So I can do any of these functions independently on any of these four outputs. These are subgroups.
But it's an interface first.
Yes.
It just happens to have the functionality of a mixer. And it is not in a traditional sense of where you have channel strips. It doesn't lie on its back with a bunch of knobs exposed. It has a row of how many knobs on the front?
It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Seven, that's right.
Seven.
And some connectors and then a bunch of connectors in the back.
Yeah, it has basically the two knobs are the microphone knobs. The two knobs before that are the line knobs, the spadiff knob, the mix cycle knob thing, and the headphone knob. And then your channel strip, as it works generally, when you have to go to your trim part of the Motu, and then you can get to things like your preamp, your pan, your solo. It doesn't have an EQ though, because I don't, like I said, it's not a full-fledged mixer. So,
and you got things like, we're just talking about different interfaces we've experienced right now. Just to answer the question, do you need a mixer or is an interface good enough? Right? It was at the end of the Frozen craze, and there was a student, his name was Jess, and he, in our wiki, wrote, do you really need a mixer? You know, and then he didn't actually do the song, he just wrote the article. And so that's a good read, because that kind of breaks down some stuff about, you know, fit for purpose. If you're recording a couple of things and you know you're going to be mixing them in software and you just need to hear a couple mics at a time, do you really need a full-fledged mixer?
Although, because I'm talking about my interface, you never did answer Francois' question about his channels.
Which was that the Mackie is one of these crazy mixers that has a multi-channel interface in it. So each channel can be recorded from or played through by a computer. So let's say Francois has his microphone plugged into channel 1 of his Onyx, and he is recording from the first two inputs, because that's what Windows likes to do. Windows likes to record on the multi-channel devices from the first two inputs. That's what Jessica's doing now. What's happening? What's happening with Jessica there?
Can you guys hear?
That's right.
She's on the left channel.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm directly addressing my mic channel strip. I'm not being mixed through a mixer function anymore. My interface has a function called a mix return, which is where all your channels essentially can kind of get mixed up and summed, if that makes, is that a good way to explain it, Derek?
Yep. And so, like, if she wanted to be on the right channel, she'd actually have to physically unplug her microphone from the first input.
Yes, from the first input and move it to the second one.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So would you use the mix return, Jessica, to have your mic be in the center instead of on the left like you have it now?
Yep. That's exactly what I do. I put my mic back on the mix return. Here we go. So I'm back on the mix return. And I'm not going to try to break it right now, but theoretically, I can pan this mic around because I'm pulling from my mix return instead. Knowing my luck, I'll break it and then I'll be stuck in the left side.
You did
again.
Back up your settings, yes?
I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, we'll pretend that she did.
Oh, wow. Cool. Neat. Yay.
All right.
Yeah, that.
Some of these interfaces do not have accessible ways of getting to the mix return, or they are. Remember when we were talking about audio subsystems and Jessica was showing you the Motu and how you could see each of those inputs as a separate pair, one and two, and mic, line, instrument, blah, and this and that and whatever. If you missed that, go check out the podcast for Monday's lecture. Some interfaces don't let you do that. You may have multiple channels, and that's great, but Windows will list that as one selectable device with an undetermined amount of channels, with 6, 8, 12, 20, 4, God only knows, however many your interface has. But if a program doesn't deal with that, then all you'll be able to do is record whatever happens to be from those first inputs. So I could do the same thing. Unfortunately, my board shows up as one multi-channel device. So, yeah, I'm mixing on it, but I can't record a mix from it with the actual interface itself unless I do some really bad, stupid, mind-brain-breaking things that do not have any relevance to this class. So I'm having to use another audio interface to record record a mix to send to Team Talk, despite the fact that I have a mixer that would otherwise be perfectly capable of doing this. But just because of the way Windows works, we can't really take advantage of that. So mixers are good summing devices. Mixers are good for letting you be able to feel of what's going on. You can reach up and you can put your hand on the mixer and you can say, okay, well, that's unmuted and that's sent to here.
Maybe that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Look
so
at
that.
Her go. Look at her go.
Can I actually reset it now? Let's. Okay.
So they're good summing devices. They're good for letting you know what's going on. You can feel and say, oh, that's routed there. Oh, no wonder that's not working. The solo button's on. I couldn't hear anything else but the thing that had nothing on it. Great. Wonderful. You know, and if it's all in software, it's like, ugh. Where did that go? Where is that? I don't know. I may not read. But at the same time, most interfaces are smaller than mixers. You don't have to connect them to your computer and to sources and to this and to that and whatever. You just have your box with your I.O. and your USB or FireWire, and you're good to go with an interface.
Yep.
Some of them are even bus powered. Some of them will run completely off of the computer. Things like the Native Instruments Audio 6 and the Behringer Euphoria 402 and 404 and the Lexicon Alpha and some of the Focusrite interfaces, all that stuff is bus-powered. So
the Motu is even bus-powered if you run it off FireWire.
But not USB, unfortunately.
No, you need an adapter to run it off USB.
The Roland Quad Capture is as well.
That one's a nice interface, too. I like that one. I'm kind of torn between the Euphoria 404 and the Native Instruments Audio 6, because the Audio 6 is like the Motu in that it has your mic instrument jacks in the front, two of those, TRS line inputs in the back, SPDIF in and out, and headphones. And all of it is addressable in Windows as separate two-channel pairs. And it's half the price of the Motu. And I kind of think that's kind of neat. It isn't FireWire like the Motu, and it doesn't have as much hardware flexibility in terms of like actually using the box to control it as the Motu. But apparently the I.O. is really clean, and I'm kind of looking at them and being curious. And the Behringer Euphoria 404 is four mic inputs with Midas-designed mic preamps, and they're really nice, so says everyone. And people that know way more than I do, who've played with way more things than I have. So, and I have them in this mixer, and I like them. And what else? Inserts on every input. So if you have a really nice compressor or a really nice something that you want inserted, you can totally do that. And they're direct outs, apparently. So you can...
That's something the Moti doesn't have, is inserts.
And it's just the amount of flexibility and connectivity on these Euphoria things are insane. So it just depends on what you want, you know, between... You know, so the Moti is like four something, and so you kind of have the best of both worlds. You don't have inserts, but you have...
Hunger. You have a little mixer.
You have a little mixer.
And actually, you can totally make it a mixer and not an interface at all. You can just have it run off power on the wall. And if you have other interfaces, just use the Moti as a mixer and mix with it.
It's pretty ridiculous. But there are things, there are various small form factor mixers that have interfaces built in that are multi-channel or that are single channel. That is to say... You know, just stereo. And, yeah.
A lot of people like the... I don't think it's an interface, though. But a lot of people like the Behringer... Was it the 1204?
Yeah, it's a mixer. And it has a... This is a USB 2 in, 2 out kind of deal. So you sum it all to the main mix and you can record straight off of it. Like I said, just depends on what you're trying to do. Things like the Lexicon Alpha. If you have a mixer... and you just want a way to record the result or play something from your computer to your mixer and keep it all balanced, they're like $60 or $70. The noise floor is like in the minus 90 dB range, which is pretty insane for something that cheap in the record side. So you get your level set and you leave it well enough alone. And for $60, you have an ACO compliant interface. Now, the mic preamp on it is horrible. I mean, it is not good at all. It doesn't even have phantom power. It's bad. The Hi-Z input on it's worse. But if you just want stereo line in, stereo line out, it, you're good. So it's like, so under $500, there are tons of options that are really good in mixers and in interfaces. So it's just a matter of finding out what you want to do and what you need. Or that you already have everything you need. At which point then you can, like, celebrate. Start using it. Keep using it.
Can you guys hear that?
Yeah, we can. It's some noise.
If I were to put a microphone into that right now, I won't. Can't even figure out what that noise might be.
The noise from mixer itself. Or...
It's my preamp.
The XLR, I was going to say.
I don't have anything plugged into that second channel. So all you're hearing is that. And if I were to plug something into that right now, that would really hurt everyone's ears.
Actually,
so
if you even if you just plugged a cable in with nothing on the end, on the other side, you're still putting a load on it, and it'll get less noisy.
Oh, really?
See, if you had a mic with an off switch, that'd be even better. Because even a dummy load, even if there's nothing on the other side...
The Audio Technica has one, but I don't think I have an extra cable.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
Getting extra cables, but yeah. But yeah, that's... What? Oops. That's not what I wanted to do.
No, but the best...
There you go, that.
But I have a really cheap, crappy microphone with an on-off switch around here that I keep because it's just a good thing to put a dummy load on a preamp channel to test its noise. It's the most unscientific way to do it, but it's the only way I can think of that actually works that doesn't have something that generates noise itself. Kind of like, you know, as blind audio engineers, we have to do certain things and think out of the box to get what we want, you know, to get the kind of result we want. We can't look at an RTA, a real-time analyzer, and figure out where standing waves are in a room, but there are things we can do to make it obvious what they are and... You know, it's interesting. It's the coolest times to be alive and the weirdest times because stuff is either incredibly accessible or as far from as you can get. One of the two extremes.
That's all I have. Do you have anything else?
You guys have any questions?
Do you have anything to say about analog versus digital and mixes? I'm sorry, I should have put my name in chat.
Okay, well, analog mixers are cool because there's a button for everything and a knob for everything and a slider and a this and a that. And you can look at it and you can tell where things are, where they're going. by feel. And an analog mixer, you get what you get. It's reliable. Means it can be reliably good, reliably bad, reliably noisy, reliably clean and amazing and pristine and beautiful and blah, whatever. But it is what it is. But they generally don't have a lot on them in terms of effects or signal analysis or enhancement or anything like that. Digital mixers run software, and that software can do any number of things. 2-4 with a signal. I say 2-4 with because it depends on what the signal is and who's behind the board.
This thing runs software.
Yeah,
it is very digitalized.
This mixer has on each channel a 4-band fully sweepable parametric EQ, which means each band could cover the entire frequency spectrum. And there are 4 types on the first and the last band you can switch around. You have gating, compression on each channel. You have 8 effects processors in this thing that can do any number of cool enhancing slash destruction type things. Reverbs, delays, choruses, flangers, phasers, various compressors and limiters and exciters and things. And all that in analog components and circuitry would be a massive rack full of gear. Bunch of stuff. The downside is nothing is static. Faders are what are the faders showing me the levels for? The outputs, the inputs. There's one graphic EQ where the motorized faders in this mixer emulate the EQ bands, and you page through banks of the bands and you move the faders to set your EQ curve. You know, it's very integrated, but at the same time you have to know where you are. What when I turn this up, what's it turning up? Because if there were a control for every function, it would be massive. And for all it does, this thing is actually quite small. The downside is if it dies, there's all your effects, there's all your everything. So you're you know, all or nothing. You're in or you're out, relying on a digital mixer like this.
So I guess the short answer is, like, if you want something that is going to always give you a specified amount or a specified thing or whatever, and can always find what that specified thing is easily, then, you know, get an analog mixer, because everything is there. Everything is feelable slash whatever. Digital mixers get the same thing, but they're either compacted and driven by menus, or still knobs and buttons, but fewer of them, and software.
So, practical example. When I was switching pre and post fade send, I went to a menu to do that. I mean, it wasn't a very hard to get to menu. It was like 3 buttons got me there. But I had to get there, nonetheless. And I got things the way I wanted. And then it's like, oh, let me go and change the EQ. So we pull up the EQ. You change things. It isn't just running my hand down a column of knobs and going, yeah, no, yep, that there. Okay, done. Cool. Was changing pages and menus and things and then playing with stuff. Now, that's kind of annoying if it's one channel and you're trying to get one channel right. But let's say you have a vocal group and they're all singing and you get one person's microphone sounding amazing. Well, guess what? On a digital mixer like this one, you can copy that channel and just paste it across everything else. Oh, you sound good. Okay, so that'll sound good on this one, that one, that one, that one, that one. Okay, there we go. So instead of trying to match all the settings on all the microphones by hand, you just copy and paste.
But how likely is the software going to be accessible?
Rarely. It's rarely accessible. So you want to rely on the mixer. Now, I'm fortunate because the iPad app is reasonably accessible for this, but I wasn't banking on it. Just something that happened to be a thing.
This.
Yep.
Sorry. In keeping with that same topic, labeling and accessibility with your hardware, do you put knobs and bits and God knows what up and down the sliders and things like that. How do you guarantee a certain level that you always have, if you know what I mean?
Just by feel. Like, it all comes by feel. You just know, okay, well, when the main slider is almost all the way up, say my finger's width from the top, that's where I need to be to be at the optimal level to send the mix to Team Talk, if I'm using the main mix to Team Talk. Or a lot of knobs on analog mixers have little pointers on them, so and center detented clicky positions. So when the EQ is flat or you're panned in the center, there's a little detented knob position, you kind of feel it click into place. So there's a lot of things you can do by touch.
Yeah, analog is a lot easier that way because, yeah, it's a lot of kind of buttons and quirks and things to memorize. But they're all there. They're all visible and kind of feelable, touchable things. In my situation, my knobs, even though I have them, continuously turn. They don't stop. Even if I'm at the optimum or lowest volume, they just keep turning and turning and turning and turning and turning. So you actually have to listen or view meters in either the analyzer in the software or in things like Reaper.
Question. Has there been any attempt to develop some kind of speech module which would be, for example, a hardware add-on and which would speak every control of a digital mixer? Has there been any attempt to do
it? No, not that I know of. Which is really annoying because as these mixers go digital, not all of them. I mean, there's always going to be tons of analog mixers that have digital interfaces kind of woven through them, like the Mackie Onyx series, for example. There's always going to be stuff like that. But a lot of these all-digital mixers are becoming network addressable, network aware. Use your iPad to control your whatever with an inaccessible app. Well, it's a network protocol. So that means theoretically anything could talk to it. Why should just the app talk to it? Why can't something that talks, something that we can tab through, talk to it? It's just such a niche market. It's like a niche within a niche. Blind people are a niche market, right? Blind people that have mixers and that are into audio, that's a niche within that. But then people that like have digital mixers that they want to control with something that talks and have the knowledge to take advantage of that are even a tinier subset still. There are not a lot of us. Not enough to make noises to say, hey!
So I just saw that Damien had a question a while back. I don't know if he remembers. And then Randy had one as well.
Yeah, I do. I might need somebody to go through some of this with me on Skype because my mind feels like it's on a... This program is not responding and will explode with a bomb signal. So, yeah.
Yeah.
No worries. One of us could definitely do that, I'm sure. Especially, it'll actually help with you if we know, number one, if you have anything, what you have, and then what you may want to possibly do. So that'll help too, like, because then we can.
Well, that's the rest of their assignment anyway. Cause
right.
Now they know. Now that's what Justin was saying, that, you know, by today, you'd have everything you need to complete your what do you have and what do you need assignment.
Right.
Essentially.
And so if you need help with things like that, it's okay. Ask us. 'Cause we'll be able to better assess you on things once we know, you know, more what your audio setup is. This will also help us with like support and things once we get into software. Randy had a question and then Ray.
Yeah, this is where I start to get confused because I'm just running my onboard sound card or sound in my computer. You know, I just have a speaker jack, a microphone jack, and a line in jack, and that's really it. So I guess this is where I get confused. I'm thinking to myself, do I need more than what I have? This is really where I start to get, you know, I just want a simple life, I guess.
Well, again, what do you want to do? What are your aspirations?
Yeah, I just want to be able to start doing just a local podcast and make it so it's not a terrible listen.
Then sounds like to me all you'd need would be either a good USB microphone that you would like, or a reasonable interface with a mic that you like.
Wiki, as Derek said, the "Do I Need a Mixer?" article. I think everyone should at least take a look at that, especially if they feel like, well, I don't know if I really need one or not. Because you might not. Before I got this interface, I used a USB microphone. It was the Audio-Technica ATR2100, and I used virtual audio cable. I didn't talk much about that. I did a little bit less on Monday, but not very much.
We're going to put the study group in from last semester in the podcast.
Oh, shoot. I need to do that. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, we don't have that.
That's essentially what I did. I didn't use mixers. I didn't use interfaces. I used other means, and I used what I had. I feel better now that I have this, and it's made life easier. But it's a matter, as Justin said, of honing your craft ultimately. And if you don't really have much of a budget right now, see what you can do to hone your craft now with what you have, or if you need, a mixer or an interface in the first place.
And, maybe just, so you're doing a podcast. Is it going to be just like you talking mainly?
I'd like to interview other people. I also need to figure out either using my iPhone to capture field interviews or using some type of digital recorder. But just interviewing local people and posting it. I'm mayor of my little local city here, so I just thought, hey, I could just do a little podcast, a weekly 10-15 minute thing, and nothing fancy. But again, I've heard podcasts where the sound levels are over and they just sound like crap, and mine doesn't have to sound great, it just can't sound like crap.
Gotcha.
Ray had a question, and then I think we should say the assignment. Well, we kind of just did, but kind of clarify.
All right, so as I understand it anyways, you guys mentioned that Windows usually only sees channels 1 and 2 from interfaces and such. But like if you have the Scarlett or the 2i4, how would it see the two other channels? Or would it?
Well, while it recognizes them from Wasapi and ASIO, doesn't mean that most programs will let you do anything with them. Things like Reaper will, but most things like Skype or TeamTalk and so on won't, which is kind of frustrating.
It'll just address the interface as a whole. Whereas if you're able to use things like Reaper or GoldWave or things that allow you to use ASIO, you can address the individual channels and record from the individual channels. So as Derek was mentioning the assignment before we adjourn, that's basically this is basically the last class, guys. So the rest of the assignment, and to kind of circle this all around, is to talk about what interfaces you may or may not have, or what sound cards you may or may not have that you use, or may have that you use, and what you may or may not need. If you think you need an interface, what are you trying to do in order to want one? Why do you want an interface? That sort of thing. If you get stuck.
Yeah, or even if you have to say, I don't know, this is what I'm trying to do. I really, my goal is to make a, cinematic 7.1 channel 2496 surround immersive experience based on recordings of kittens. I'd be like, okay, condenser mic, something, probably lots of lint removing type things from all the hair. Lots of silica gel. I don't know what all, but knowing what you want
aside,
to do.
Good preamps.
Yes, of course.
Flippancy aside, good preamps, because kittens are quiet. Like, yep. To record any nature sounds, you need good, low noise floor preamps.
So if you get stuck, ask Audio Discuss. That's audio-discuss. That's a big list of people. They'd be willing to help or give some thoughts. Ask us. We'd be willing to help or give some thoughts.
do worst some case, research. We don't know, and then we all research and learn stuff together.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
You know, Google's awesome too.
Yeah.
Google's amazing.
I've been co-instructing this class since it started in 2012. Every semester, I've learned something by teaching it.
In fact, he won't go into too much detail, but when I was doing my subsystems thing on Monday, and I was having him demo stuff for me, he learned a whole bunch of things about Wasapi on Monday that he didn't know about.
Did not know I could pull from channel 10 of one device in Wasapi and make it show up on channel, you know, one of another totally separate device. Can't do aggregate stuff when combining inputs and outputs, but you can have one device's inputs going to another device's outputs through Wasapi, at least.
That is kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. I just wish you
wasn't
could
that part of the assignment on Monday to post write up like some of the things we would want for a setup.
Yeah, and
so we started with the microphones and things like that, and now we added interfaces on top of that to kind of, you know, bring it full circle and
right.
You know, full equipment list. So that's why we started you guys off with the microphones and the microphone accessories. You know, if there's anything else you need, this kind of brings it full circle. You know, if you need more cables for something, if you need a totally new interface, if you need a bigger mixer, if you're happy with your equipment.
Yeah, I mentioned a few different things in the setup that I was looking for, thing that I wrote.
And the only reason I hadn't got back to people who have written those yet is because I wanted to make sure that everyone had all the information first, in case I wanted to amend what they said. But I've seen some pretty cool stuff come in.
Well, as far as the official study group and the official essentials module, it has come to an end. But I could certainly stay around and answer questions for a bit if people still have some. But the official part has come to an end, and we will move on and onwards and upwards. Make sure you turn in your assignments by Monday, and that'll pretty much be the end of that, or at least get in contact with us.
Yep.